Edema, where heaven and earth have met. Since the day our Blessed Mother visited her cousin Elizabeth, she has never stopped visiting her people and care for them in time of need, reminding them of the gospel of her Son. This happened in Guadalupe, Mexico, and then in Lourdes, France. Let us now hear what was the purpose and message of her visitation in Fatima on every 13th of the month from May to October in 1917. Here now is the director of Radio Maria Canada, Father George Amaro.
Welcome, brothers and sisters. Welcome back for this program about Fatima that happened in 1917. We have been speaking about what was going on at that year in the world at large, especially in Europe. The First World War that started in 1914 and ended in 1918. And as I said, our Blessed Mother said that this world was going to end, but a worse war would start. And the first 50 years of the first 50 years of the 20th century were bloody years in Europe. But then in the 80s, already in the 80s, there were other problems in the Balkans, the dismemberment of the old Yugoslavia, that the place that gave origin to the First World War, and the things didn't get solved after the Treaty of Versailles in the Balkans. And in the 80s we had another a civil war there, Serbs against Croatians against Bosnia. Three religions, the Muslims of Bosnia-Herzegovina, the Catholics of Croatia, and the Orthodox of Serbia. It was somehow a holy and ethnic war, and there were massacres, as you know. So the First World War, from 14 to 18, the bloody civil Spanish war, communists against nationals, or we could say fascists, from 36 to 39, and that in that very same year, from 39 to 45, we have the Second World War. And then in the 80s, we have again the problem of the Balkans. So this was a bloody century, the 20th century. And so an appearance of our Blessed Mother was mostly justified. So let us finish what was going on the 17th worldwide. And we were speaking about the First World War, and today we speak about the Treaty of Versailles, that was the end of the war, and then next time we will be speaking about what was going on in Portugal, where the apparitions have happened. So, in as far as the Treaty of Versailles, following the events of the First World War, from 14 to 18, ending when peace was brokered between German and the Central Forces and the Allied powers. You know that the Central Forces were composed of Germany, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and the Ottoman Empire, against the Allied powers that were England, France, and Italy later on, and the United States later on. So with the signing of the Treaty of Versailles, however, this treaty forced punitive measures on Germany that further destabilized Europe and laid the groundwork for the start of the Second World War. By understanding the causes of the World War First, historians can develop a keen comprehension of how, why this devastating conflict began. When Germany signed the armistice ending hostilities in the First World War on November 11, 1918, its leaders believed they were accepting a peace without victory. Yeah, that was the expression used at that time, a peace without victory, as outlined by the US President Woodrow Wilson in his famous 14 points. But from the moment the leaders of the victorious Allied nations arrived in France for the peace conference in early 1919, the post-war reality began to diverge sharply from Wilson's idealistic vision. So let us see what were those 14 points Woodrow Wilson in an address at a joint meeting of Congress in January 18, 1918, during which in this address he outlined this vision for a stable, long-lasting peace in Europe, the Americas and the rest of the world following the First World War. So the first point was open covenants of peace openly arrived at, because what led to the First World War, there were alliances. There were these empires and countries seeking alliances, and mostly they were seeking those alliances in secret. So the first point says, do nothing secret. Do all the covenants and alliance, do everything openly. Then freedom of the seas. The seas should be free to navigate. The third, the removal so far as possible of all economic barriers. So this idea was probably the one that originated in the European Union, where there are no economic barriers. In the beginning, the European Union was just that. No barriers economically, no tariffs, no borders as far as economy, and then it became a real community of 27 nations that is now. And one of the other reasons why this European community was founded, and it was founded by three Catholics, one German, one French, and one Italian, it was to avoid another war. So it was because of peace that this community was formed. Now, the fourth point was the reduction of national armaments to the lowest point consistent with domestic safety. And the fifth, impartial adjustment of all colonial claims. And that means also that the peoples that want self-determination, they should be able to get it. So was not just the claims of the colonial powers over this land, but the people that live in that land, if they wish autonomy and independence and self-govern, then self-determination, then they should be given that, without any need to conquer it by war. And indeed, there were many, many colonies that, like India, without war, they conquered their independence from the British Empire. And then the sixth point evacuation of all Russian territory that was taken by the war. The seventh, evacuation and restoration of Belgium that had been also taken up. The 8 point, liberation of France and return to where the Alsace and Lorraine that German had, well, was not really German that got these places, it was Prussia, but Prussia turned into German later on. Germany was Prussia in the Middle Ages up to 19th century, and then it turned, that territory turned into what we know now Germany. The 9 point, readjustment of the frontiers of Italy to conform to clearly recognizable lines of nationality. And the 10 point, the peoples of Austro-Hungarian should be accorded the freest opportunity of autonomous development. And so the dismemberment of this Austro-Hungarian Empire. Remember that the First World War started because Serbia belonged to this empire. Serbia that had belonged to the Ottoman Empire, now it belonged to this Austro-Hungarian Empire, and wanted independence. And so all the hostilities started with that assassination of the heir of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So it all started that way. So this is one of the empires that is going to be dismembered. And of course, the other empire that is going to be dismembered, because with the First World War, we have the end of another empire, that is the Ottoman Empire, is going to be dismembered. What is Turkey is Turkey, where the empire starts. But then what is Iraq is Iraq. What is Iran? Iran is Iran. And even the Holy Land that belonged to the Ottoman Empire at up to the First World War started to belong to the British Empire till the independence, the independence, or so to say, till the United Nations gave a land to Israel on 1948. After the Second World War, after the massive murder of 5 million of Jews by the Nazis. So here we are. Let us have a little pause and we continue with these proposals of the US president. Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and so we are discussing these proposals that were very idealistic, so no a peace without victory, as it was called. And we arrived at the number 10, the peoples of Austria-Hungarian Empire should have their self-determination. The the 11th evacuation of occupation forces from Romania, Serbia and Montenegro. Serbia should be accorded free and secure access to the sea. Serbia is the biggest country in that area, in the Balkans. As you know, they all formed later on Yugoslavia under Tito, but that it was not a good arrangement, because in a way it was Serbia dominating the rest, Croatia and Montenegro and Bosnia Herzegovina. It was somehow Serbia governing all the other parts, and of course that later on came out in the war that we have just commented in the 80s, where there were massive ethnic cleansing, which later on it all came to trial. The 12th point, autonomous development of the non-Turkish peoples of the Ottoman Empire. So again, we have this dismemberment of this empire, and free passage of the Dardanelles to the ships and commerce of all nations. And then 13 is the independence of Poland. Poland was always a country suffering either from Russia on the east side or from Germany on the west side. As a matter of fact, as you know, in the Second World War, it was the first country that was to be occupied by German, easily occupied by German Poland. Now, and the 14th point, it was probably the most important one, a general association of nations to be formed to guarantee to its members political independence and territorial integrity. So it was called the League of the Nations. So this League of the Nations was to be formed. And this League of the Nations, we can look at it as the prehistory of the United Nations. And this was something that was not, it was accepted by the European countries, but not by America. And that was the bad thing, as we will see later. So the reality, Versailles Treaty forced Germany to give up the territory of Belgium, Czechoslovakia, Poland, return Alsace and Lorraine to France, to cede all its overseas colonies. So Germany ceded all of its overseas colonies in China, Pacific and Africa to the Allied nations. In addition, it had to drastically reduce its armed forces and accept a demilitarization and an Allied occupation of the region around the Rhine River. Most important, the Article 231 of the treaty placed all blame for inciting the war squarely on Germany, which is not fair. We know that the conflict was not started by Germany, but the Austro-Hungarian Empire as a reaction against that murder of the heir of this empire. And so Germany was forced to pay several million in reparations to the Allied nations. So this all amounts to a big humiliation. Due to the lasting resentment of the Versailles Treaty, the National Socialist, I don't know why it is called socialist, This is the Nazi party. He was called National Socialist. Maybe socialism was really in fashion in those times, but not all those that call themselves socialists were socialists indeed. And so this party, with other radical right-wing parties, were able to gain power in 1920s. In the early 30s, by promising to overturn its harsh provisions and make Germany into a major European power once again. So we could see that psychologically somehow the Second World War was Germany taking revenge or attempting to take revenge over the defeat of the First World War, and not really just the defeat, but the conditions that the Allied powers, those who won the war, imposed on Germany. And you can see in all the speeches of Hitler that he capitalizes in that resentment and in gearing up the people to accept a war. And plus, all the nations could see that indeed Germany was preparing for war. Even the help that Germany was giving to the fascists of Francisco Franco, to the national, so-called nationals, all the West of Spain in the Civil War, the help he was giving, it was just training and experimenting his weapons, the weapons that were going to be used in the Second World War by Germany. So it was, in a way, that war for Germany was a preparation for the Second World War. And as a matter of fact, since Hitler helped Francisco Franco a lot, he came once by train to Andai, which is the border between France and Spain, to meet Franco and ask him to help him to join the war, siding with Germany. And Franco made him wait for half an hour. It is said, historically, made him wait for half an hour, and he managed to get Spain out of the conflict, so he never joined the conflict with Germany. And as a matter of fact, something he did, not just Spain and Portugal, they changed the rails. They changed the rails. If you go to, even today, to Spain and Portugal, you see that the length of the rails, is different from the ones in Europe. And that was precisely to avoid a Hitler invasion of Spain, because, as you know, Hitler invaded France. So the Versailles Treaty the historians say, they made possible the Second World War, was not inevitable. In 1945, when the leaders of the United Nations, Great Britain and Soviet Union met at Potsdam, so for signing the conditions of peace for the Second World War, they blame the failures of Versailles. You know, so they blame the failures of the Versailles Treaty for making another great conflict necessary, and vow to right the wrongs of their peacekeeping predecessors. But Neyberg, like many historians, takes a more nuanced view, pointing to the events that rather the treaty, including the United States not joining the League of the Nations, and the rise of the Stalinist regime in the Soviet Union, as necessary elements in the understanding the path to the Second World War. So there are other elements, like the rising the Stalinist regime in the Soviet Union. Certainly the one psychologically, the fact that German was humiliated in this treaty, the First World War, and the fact that the United States never accept this League of the Nations, because if this League of the Nations, which was the prehistory of the United Nations, you see, after the Second World War, then the United States accepted the formation of the United Nations. But if he had accepted the formation of this League of Nations that was to be the United Nations, maybe the conflict arising could have been solved by diplomatic means and not reaching the war. Now, I just have one thing to finish up this 1917 in Europe. It is something that I learned in Ethiopia in my years of missionary life there. It is concerned with this humiliation. And my guess is that the politicians, if they knew a little bit more, if they were psychologists, if they knew a little bit more of human nature, probably they wouldn't have signed that Versailles Treaty the way they signed it. It means that I was once in conflict in Ethiopia with, I don't remember, was it a person or a group of people, that they did something wrong against me, and then I called upon the elders, the council of the elders. In each village, the council of the elders are formed by elders, you know, by wise people, and the wisdom most of the time comes with experience and old age. And so this council of the elders, they found the wrongdoings of the other people and they judged somehow against them. And so I was right in what they did against me. But by the end of this meeting, the elders also found faults in my behavior in that conflict. They also found some faults. And indeed, those faults were fictitious, but somehow invented. But they explained to me later. They said, oh, Father, if these people go away from this meeting humiliated, they will take revenge on you. So better that you accept these faults of yours, so that somehow we balance the things and their self-esteem is not damaged here, and so in a way they go home happy, well, saying that the father also had is to blame because of this and that, and so that was the reason why they invented faults that were not there, invented faults of mine, and I assumed them because of peace, so that people would not go away from that meeting humiliated. So if German had not been humiliated in the First World War, probably the Second World War, the one that our Blessed Mother said that a worse war would come, probably would not have come, but indeed came. So next time we see each other, we are going to speak about what was going on in Portugal on 1917, so to understand the panorama in which our Blessed Mother came to Earth. In Portugal, so what was going on in Portugal and what was going on in the whole Europe that we have just looked upon.
have been listening to Fatima, Where Heaven and Earth Have Met, with Father George Amaro. Thank you for joining us today, and we pray that this program is an encouragement to you. Please join us here on Radio Maria Canada, where Father George Amaro will continue his teaching about our Blessed Mother and the significance of Fatima.